Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how awake are you? I guess awake enough to hear me and be listening to the show. But let's talk about spiritual awakening. What does that mean? And are we spiritually awake? Or just are we getting there? So let's talk to the author of The Leap, The Psychology of Spiritual Awakening, Steve Taylor. Steve, welcome to Energy Stew.
Hi, Peter. Nice to be here.
I'm so glad. It sounds like you're awake.
Yeah, pretty much. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm pretty much awake.
Oh, good. Well, this is a fascinating book, and I think it's very important for people to learn about and understand not just what awakening is, but how to hold it in our lives, in our world, and what to expect from it. And I think it's really important that we address this right now because there is an awakening happening and has for, of course, centuries among some people. And maybe indigenous people were much more awake than we are in their way. And so it's a journey that we're on as humans. It's an evolution. And I think that's something that you get right into in your book, is that the universe really wants to become more conscious. And we're a handle for it.
Yeah, I think it's connected to evolution. I think from the beginnings of life on the Earth, and even before then, evolution has been a process of a process by which living beings become more awake, or more aware, more alive, more conscious. So the living beings gradually become more conscious of themselves, and they become more conscious of the world around them through evolution. And that's really what spiritual awakening is. Spiritual awakening means becoming more aware of the world around you. It means becoming more aware of the depths of being within you. It means becoming more connected to other people and more connected to the world, to natural things, to the whole universe. So it's a process of an evolutionary process of awakening, which has been underway for millions of years.
And there are many levels of it, because it looks like in many ways, most of our planet now is, or humans on the planet now, are asleep. And what does that mean if we're in an evolution of awakening and most people seem to be sleeping?
Well, it's a progressive process. I think a lot of human beings are still asleep. But I think some human beings are gradually awakening and becoming more awake as time goes by. And in our culture, I think there are a lot of characteristics which I associate with sleep. So that's a sense of separateness, a sense of a desire to accumulate things, a desire to become wealthy and powerful and to exploit other people, to exploit the earth and other human beings and the whole of our planet's resources. They're all characteristics of the sleep state. Which is based on separateness, and it's based on a desire to accumulate things to alleviate the pain of separateness. But there are lots of characteristics of wakefulness which are building up as well, like a desire to connect with the planet, a sense of compassion for other living beings, for other human beings, a desire to contribute to the human race, a desire to improve social conditions, to alleviate suffering. And so I think at the moment there's kind of like almost like a competition between the characteristics of the sleep state and the characteristics of the wakeful state. And a lot of the issues in our societies are related to that competition.
And there's a distinction that you made in the book that I was glad to be aware of, and that's how in many ways, the religions of today are a sign of being asleep. Because let's just say that that the wakefulness that we have, or that we that the that we're following while we're asleep, is our ego. Our ego never sleeps, and so the ego has created is a separateness. The ego operates as a separate entity, and has created this sense of religion as a God who's out there, separate from us, and so we're using our ego to gain God's pleasure and approval, versus actually finding God in everything, including ourselves, and integrating with it.
I think there's a big distinction between religion and spirituality. So religion, let's say conventional or traditional religion, is based on supporting or consoling the ego or strengthening the ego. It's very ego-based. So it's based on promising the ego pleasures and wealth in the afterlife, in an eternal paradise where the ego can live forever. Or it's based on belonging to a group, belonging to a belief system, which itself that strengthens the ego. And it's about trying to strengthen your own ego by strengthening your group. So a lot of religion is based on a desire for conversion, and a belief that you have the truth and other people do not have the truth. So you are superior
to
them.
It's very tribal element. Versus what we're striving for in wakefulness is collectivity.
Yeah, in wakefulness we don't need to belong to a group. You know, we don't need to be tribal because we feel connected to everything. You only really need to be tribal when you feel separate, because you strengthen your ego by belonging to a group. But if you don't feel separate, then there's no need for group identity, because you sense that. Well, there is no sense of separateness. You are connected with everything, and therefore there's no sense of aloneness. There's no sense of separation. And that's what spirituality is based on. Spirituality is based on expanding your own being so that you incorporate other living beings, you incorporate the natural world, you incorporate the whole of the universe. And it's about transcending separateness and transcending any egoic impulse to accumulate things or to belong to a group. And so it's really, as you say, it's pretty much the opposite of conventional religion.
Well, but also what you're saying and what sounds like what we're trying to return to is the way indigenous people felt about their lives in nature and in with each other. And I like the point you made in the book about it, is that the universe is constantly seeking more complexity and more refinement and more consciousness. And so the period that we've gone through since those early times, when we've actually separated ourselves from nature and so much of life through our egos and through just the arrogance of a sense of superiority that humans have behaved within in recent centuries, we've also developed more complexity technically, and we understand things in a more profound way, but it's separate. So now the idea is to take that complexity. For instance, all this wonderful technology that we've created and the internet and so many tools, new tools, but to find out how to integrate them into collective consciousness.
There's when I was younger, I was always fascinated by the differences in the way that indigenous peoples perceive the world and relate to the world, and the way that so-called civilized Western peoples relate to the world. And it always seemed to me that there was a massive psychological difference in the way that those two groups of people relate to the world. And I think there were basically two main differences, which I talked about in a book called The Fall. One difference is that indigenous peoples generally don't feel a sense of separateness. They feel that they are part of the world and that they are totally ingrained into nature. They are part of nature. They participate in the natural world. And therefore, there is no sense of otherness. There's no desire to exploit the natural world because the natural world is part of them. There is a sense of respect towards nature, a sense of empathy towards other living beings.
And then there was a fall.
Yeah, then there was a fall. And the fall, it was a fall into separateness. It was a fall into the delusion that we are separate from nature, that we are beings who live in the world, but are not somehow of the world. And that immediately creates a sense of opposition. It kind of frees us to exploit the natural world. If you don't feel that you are part of nature, then you can exploit nature. You can use nature as a supply of resources without thinking about the consequences. You can feel a sense of superiority to other living beings. You can feel that you are entitled to have dominion over living beings, and you can exploit the whole of the world and you can control the whole of the world. But ultimately, as a lot of indigenous peoples warned us, including a lot of Native Americans, ultimately that can only lead to catastrophe. That separateness and that desire for power over nature can only lead to ecological catastrophe. You know, and we're seeing the beginnings of that now. But as you say, yeah, I think now there is a kind of a movement. It's kind of like a full circle movement. We're beginning to regain that sense of connectedness to nature, that sense of respect to nature. So it is almost as if we're turning full circle, but in a more complex and in some ways a more intellectual and more, in some ways, more mature sensibility.
Right, and many of us are collective-minded, and yet we're facing a world right now that's really in confusion, and the ego is rearing its head as powerfully as it can right now. And I've always said, yes, you know, the beast is raising its head so we know how to cut it off.
Yeah, that's good.
And yet it's frightening to a lot of us. And yet, let's come back to wakefulness and understanding that if everything is whole and we see the flow of the universe in everything, then how can we be upset about the ego now demonstrating itself so largely in our lives?
Well, because we feel a sense of empathy and compassion for other human beings, other living beings, and the whole of nature. So the ego creates suffering for itself and for other living beings, for the whole of nature, for the whole world. The ego is a massive source of suffering.
Right, right. Yeah, I appreciate that we have empathy now for the people who are suffering because the ego is being, in a sense, cruel.
Yeah, and we sympathize, we empathize for the people who have strong egos and who are suffering as well. You know, the people who are striving to become powerful and wealthy, and the people who are exploiting other human beings. You know, we know that they, no matter how hard they try, they're never going to find satisfaction or fulfillment. And, you know, we can empathize with them, even though we can also, we can sense their cruelty and their oppression.
Right. And so how do we apply wakefulness in the face of cruelty other than compassion, sympathy, empathy?
Well, I think the best way to respond to cruelty is not to be cruel in return. The best way to respond to cruelty is with presence and with empathy. And I always think that if you project unconditional love, even to people who are being cruel to you, then that's the best way of penetrating their cruelty. That's the best way of dissolving their hostility. You know, hostility will always dissolve in the face of love. hostility never dissolves in the face of aggression. Hostility just becomes more intense. So I think that if you present calm, unconditional love in the face of cruelty, then that can dissolve away the enmity of your oppressors.
Yeah, we could use the Dalai Lama as a role model, because the Tibetans have been so oppressed by the Chinese and tortured and all kinds of terrible things. And he hasn't responded as an aggressor to that. And it's interesting that, a lot of people don't understand that, but he preaches peace. And eventually, we can get there. I do believe that we're headed in the right direction, and this evolution that is pervasive is always, is always pushing us forward in ways. And then there's a whole school of integral evolution and their purpose is to understand, to integrate everything as possible, the good of everything, let go of the negative of everything. And so we move forward not trying to disown the past, but to find the treasures in it and try to make the most of things. And so wherever we can find a silver lining, let's take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about crises. A crisis can cause a lot of disruption, a lot of turmoil for the people involved. But ultimately, crises, once we face them, once we resolve them, they shift us into a higher level of functioning. If a crisis occurs in a community, the community becomes more interwoven and more connected, and the whole community shifts into a different level of integration. The same when we undergo a crisis in our own personal lives. If we acknowledge the crisis, if we face it and accept it, then it facilitates growth and development. We touch into deeper resources within ourselves. We become more confident. We feel more competent. We become stronger, and we become more spiritual.
Yeah, and greater purpose.
So crises always have a positive effect. They lead to greater integration.
Right. I remember after 9/11. How the whole world kind of found each other, and our hearts were shared everywhere, and it was amazing. Yeah. It's just that we weren't ready to take that to a higher level, and were exploited by it. But and that's another thing about wakefulness that makes it difficult, is that a lot of people don't understand it, and it takes time. It takes time for people to appreciate being in the presence of wakefulness.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people experience a sudden shift into wakefulness, usually when they're in the midst of intense psychological turmoil. So this relates to what we were just saying about crises. There are a lot of people, when they're diagnosed with cancer, or when they suffer a bereavement, maybe when they're in the midst of addiction, alcoholism, or when they suffer from intense depression or stress, they undergo a sudden shift into a new state of being, into a state of wakefulness. But usually these people don't have any background in spiritual practices or spiritual paths, so it takes them a while for them to understand what's actually happened to them. So there's sometimes an initial period of confusion. And if they try to explain to other people what's happened, and other people say, "Oh, you sound like you've been taking drugs, or you sound like you've gone crazy."
Well, that's true for a lot of people who have had near-death experiences. Have been in other dimensions, and I know someone who has had two of them, and he feels blessed that he had a spiritual background first, because he can handle it, and feels like so many people had nobody, after they had these real incredible new understandings of life, that they had nobody to talk to about it, and eventually they had to let go of it. They couldn't hold on to it.
Yeah, I discussed a few cases in the Leap where people they underwent this sudden shift, and they were completely, so-called ordinary people in everyday life with normal jobs, and they underwent this sudden transformation, and in quite a lot of cases, they ended up being seen by psychiatrists and being
And told
prescribed
that they're
anti.
crazy.
Sorry.
Told that they're crazy.
Yeah. And even though they were convinced themselves that they were having some profound transformation, they didn't know anything about spirituality, but they were still convinced that something powerfully positive was happening to them. But everybody around them was saying, "Oh, you've gone crazy. You need some medication." But they had the, most people in most cases they have the common sense to go with the transformational impulses. So usually, eventually, despite the confusion and despite the doubts of people around them, even despite the medication, the transformative effects do almost always manifest themselves in the end.
Well, let's talk about this manifestation of wakefulness and how we can hold it or not. Because there's so much in your book that really examines the process of wakefulness and what it means, and maybe we could talk more about it in a subsequent show, because it's very important, I think, for people to have a deeper understanding of the process as they might be undergoing it, and be supported by that perspective that you offer, because not all of us, everybody is, I work with the human design system, and it just shows how different we all are from each other on so many levels of feelings and mind. No matter how awake we might be, we still are born to different personalities that manage it differently. And so there are a lot of people out there who are born to be really live in a higher state of consciousness each day, to not be so caught up in their feelings and in the struggle. And yet there are people who, are awake and compare themselves to others and go, "Oh, I must not be awake." 'Cause look at that guy, he can meditate for hours and always smiling, and and it's a different, 'cause we also I also look at our destiny cards, and it's very, they make it very clear what our particular shadows are. So does human design. And we all have different shadows. And so we look at somebody else, and they say, they're not as, their
I
shadows
was.
might not be as difficult. What's that? And they might not, their shadows might not be as difficult. And they go, "Well, I guess I'm not awake," or, "I guess I'm, it's too hard for me." And then they can't climb out of it. And so, but you talk a lot about the different kinds of wakefulness, and
I mean, the first thing, but there are probably two important things to be aware of. And one is that there are different degrees of wakefulness. So, some people have a belief
right.
that once you're awakened, once you're enlightened, that's it. You're in a state of complete bliss and all your problems disappear. And you're in a state of ecstasy for the rest of your life, free of all problems, free of all desires. But there are many different wakefulness makes up a very wide continuum of different states. So
Yeah,
some a lot
but
I
I'd
think a
like
lot of
to.
people experience a mild degree of wakefulness,
Would
which
you
is
mind
probably.
exploring that? Would you mind exploring that more? Because we're getting near the end of the show,
Oh, okay.
and I think this is a very important. It's very important for people to understand how to see themselves in the process of who they might be, and what to hope for. And
Well,
because,
maybe, if I discuss some of the different characteristics of wakefulness. So on the one hand, there are what you could call perceptual characteristics. And they are characteristics, for example, that you feel a sense that the world around you is very vivid and beautiful. You feel a sense of the strangeness of things. You feel fascinated by small, everyday things. And you have a kind of sense of
Right.
wonder and awe about the world around you.
Right.
Whereas
Yeah.
many people kind of switch off to the world around them. The world becomes a bit
And
mundane and
many
familiar.
people just see the problems in the details. But, you know, we're coming into a time of a great leap, you know, the name of your book, because we're in an alignment with the center of our galaxy now that is raising the frequency of our planet. The Schumann resonance is going sky high, and we have to catch up with it. And so I think a lot of people are going to need your book because they're going to need to process this.
Yeah, I mean, another important thing is it relates to what we were talking about earlier about group identity, is that awakened people transcend the sense or the need for group identity. So they don't have a sense of national identity or regional or ethnic identity, racial identity or political, religious identity. And they don't differentiate between people of different identities. So they accept all human beings in exactly the same way, no matter how superficially different they may be. And they have no need to belong to groups and no need to reinforce their egos in that sense.
Right,
and they also they lose the impulse to accumulate as well.
But being wakeful in a society that's fighting in many ways, people's egos are challenging it, then it's sometimes harder for people to deal with the circumstances around them when they're being challenged so harshly. So it's, you know, I've been different all my life, and a lot of people appreciate it, and there are a lot of people who really are very nasty about it because for whatever reason whatever they're protecting in themselves are intimidated or whatever, and I've seen, you know, certainly difficult responses from people. But we have to actually end the show. I would love to talk with you again, if you're willing.
Oh yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, just let me know and we can arrange something.
Okay, good. Because this is wonderful. I think your book is very important. It's called The Leap: The Psychology of Spiritual Awakening. Is there a website?
Yeah. My website is StephenMTaylor.com. So that's Stephen with a V, M for Mark. StephenMTaylor.com.
That's great. Steve Taylor, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's really important, and I'm so glad to talk with you. And this
yeah,
is
thanks,
Peter
Peter.
Roth.
It's been a
your...
pleasure.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.